Life gives you the run around, you say. You wanna know how much dues must you pay? Well, you can have what you want to. Where there's a will, there's always a way. Keeping your eyes on that mountain top, one step at a time. Don't ever, ever stop. Keep on when your mind says quit. Dream on till you find you're living it. I'll be right by your side. Yeah, baby, keep on. Don't stop till you win your prize. Lean on all the love that's in my eyes. You're a diamond to me. Yes, you are. Shine on. Shine on.
Eric Begg with Shine On. It's from his album, Eric Bibb in 50 Songs. By the way, Eric Bibb is the son of late musical theater singer Leon Bibb. He's also the godson of Paul Robeson. And he specializes, especially he likes the blues and folk singing. So, and I like this particular song. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we have a lot to cover today, but it all depends on you. Think of it as a kind of pop quiz. I hated pop quizzes, which is why I guess in my old age, I like the idea of getting people all tense about it. Oh, but I'm just joking. We have a lot to cover. But what we're doing, if you've noticed, is we're talking a lot about the season that we're in. And we're talking about about politics, what we understand, to the extent that we understand politics. The first topic I'd like to take a shot at, as we talk about, I put these things under the heading of party politics. Everybody's playing with our minds. Look, in the time that we're in, they're so serious, you can't take them seriously. That's how serious they are. But you do have to pay attention, and you should try to be, you know, kind of current with where things are going. We'll be talking about this for a while. This is not going to go away anytime soon. The 2018 midterm elections have been that impactful. So we'll be talking about this for some time to come. So how do you like President Trump's invitation to Jeff Sessions that he ought to resign, which he did yesterday? It was quite a ceremony, actually. It was moving to the people who were there, and the Department of Justice watching their former boss, slip into the sunset. But I'm going to ask you to share with us from your perspective, what is the significance of Sessions' firing, or if you prefer, his acceptance of the invitation to resign? We're going into it right away, 888-874-4888. What does that mean? What does the signal mean? Firing Sessions. And Donald Trump, basically, this was not a surprise. He had already tried to do it a number of times and pulled back from the decision. But he decided to cut the cake. Let us understand from you how you interpret Jeff Sessions' departure. especially as it comes at this particular time, immediately after the midterm elections. All right, you are the political analyst of the moment. Tell us what we are to be thinking about that. Ma'at, you're on the air.
Greetings to the beloved family. And you, Therese, we want you to stay well. We need you in these times. it's like a tsunami coming down in terms of, you know, I'm still trying to figure out Khashoggi and everything else. And it's like the news is such an influx. It's just unbelievable. But in terms of Sessions, I guess, you know, this guy Trump is somewhat predictable because it's always the next shiny object, you know, because he was totally unhinged. Luckily, I didn't see it from, you know, when it was happening, so I missed all that 90 minutes, thank God. But I saw enough clips where I saw this guy was truly unhinged. I mean, he couldn't even talk straight. And, of course, the combativeness. But getting back to Sessions, it really is a dire situation because how it went down, this Matthew Whitaker, he's got quite, I mean, he actually auditioned for the job, okay? And he's involved with that, Corvus guy, a similar name like that, but this is a guy that went before the grand jury. I also heard this morning through Democracy Now that he was involved with this business in Miami, something like Master Patent Marketing, I think it was called, which yes. was a sham company and had to be shut down. So I hope all
but,
of that
comes out.
But
you're getting away from the subject. I want you on point. I want you on point today. Trump fires Sessions. What are we supposed to think about that?
Well, I think we're supposed to analyze who he's putting in. To, you know, you have to look at the fact that, first of all, it might not be legal because Rosenstein, in terms of the DOJ guidelines, is supposed to be. Plus, according to Laura Coates, who comes on CNN sometimes and with Don Lemon a lot of times, she's a black young woman, a former federal prosecutor, and she says that because he's not nominated, I mean, you know, because he didn't pass the confirmation process, and he's a chief of staff, that he could not even serve the 200 and some days under the, I think it's called the Vacancy Reform Act. And she said that he also couldn't be in a recess. So we look for these Dems to do their homework. You know, they already got off a letter saying...
Yeah, but you're off topic, Maat.
What is the question? I thought you wanted to...
Heed these words. Trump fires Sessions. That's all. That's the only clue that you need. Trump fires Sessions. How do we interpret that?
Well, I won't go into it since you don't want the analysis of the who's and what's and the wherefore this guy Matthew no. Whitaker, but you want my feeling about it?
No, I just want to know that from your perspective, with all that you know, and all of you read and watched and listened to, how do we, all of us collectively, how do we interpret this?
Well, it's just more of his craziness. You know, in terms of picking a guy who has openly said that the meeting in the Trump Tower with the Russians, that was no problem and should have been, of course, reported to the FBI, and who said all kinds of things in auditioning for the position as a CNN commentator. But it's just, it cannot end well.
We leave it there. Thank you for getting us started today. Michael from Long Island, three words. Trump fires Sessions?
Well, I want to say good afternoon to you and to the PRN family.
Thank you.
I also want to say this is Ben's cousin for the one who will know who I am. Well, I think that what happened yesterday is really the beginning, or not really the beginning because it's been going on for a while, but it's really the reflection of the fascist nature of this country. Because what's happening with Trump and what we saw, if we look at the whole day yesterday, not only the firing of Jeff Sessions, but the way he treated the news person from CNN when he threw him out.
All I want you to talk about is Sessions. Trump fires Sessions. That's all I want you to talk about.
Well, that's him manipulating the system, and that's him putting in people to try to cover up all the corruption that's going on right now. He doesn't want Sessions in there. He wants somebody that he can use and manipulate.
You made a really good point. That's a very, very good point. But is it your only point?
Well, my main point is that we are just in such a danger zone with Trump out of control. And the thing is, you know, we call him crazy, we call him mad, but this is very systematic elimination of all our rights. And until we take a stand as a nation, as people, as consciousness, and make a change to make this thing change, we're all in danger, we're all vulnerable, and we're all coming to a point of extinction. That's how I see it.
All right. You get a series of good points. Thank you, Michael.
But you're
looking
welcome
for some other points as well. Bill from Brooklyn. Trump.
Good evening.
Fires.
Hi, good afternoon.
Sessions.
Good afternoon, Utrice.
Hello.
To all the PRN. Hi. Yes, again, folks aren't following directions. That's always my story. Trump fired Sessions, and to answer your question directly, that brings us about two steps closer to the red line for prosecution of this president and potential impeachment. So we're getting closer to that point, in my opinion, because of this action.
Now, why would you say that?
Well, because we're approaching a real constitutional crisis with this president. As people have stated and inferred, we have a dictator, basically, someone who believes he's above the law. And if we're going to maintain any remnants of this so-called democracy, then there are going to be very few options if Mr. Trump proceeds with assaulting and attacking verbally Mr. Mueller and proceeding to eliminate him from his position. So we're a couple steps closer to that point, in my opinion.
Okay. Great points that you made. Great points. We still
Thank
have
you.
A little bit more to go. Lisa from New York. Trump fired.
How are you today?
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Utrice?
I'm hanging in.
That's good. Well, I just wanted to say that I don't think this is a manipulation of the system at all. Jeff Sessions has been really missing in action as far as being an attorney general for Donald Trump. I'm not a fan of Trump, but, you know, we act as if because we don't like Donald Trump that he shouldn't have people in his cabinet who do what they're supposed to do, you know, support him in any way. And this has been a long time coming. This has been months of talk about the fact that Jeff Sessions needed to go. And, you know, we didn't like him when he was being nominated for this position. I think that President Trump should have the right to get rid of him.
Okay, but have you given us the significance of this? You haven't gotten close.
I mean, I just really think the significance is that he needs to have an attorney general who is there. I mean, if not to support him, and of course I don't think he should be supported in most things. And I mean, Jeff, the things that Jeff Sessions has done have been extremely negative things, you know, racist and, he doesn't want to legalize marijuana, things like that. So I think it's time to see a new face here and see what that does. I also am of the belief that I have never seen any evidence that Russia interfered in our election. I think that's something that was made up, and it involved the DOJ, the intelligence agencies, and the DNC. And I would like to see someone get to the bottom of that.
Okay, but you haven't brought us closer.
I'm sorry, but I do. I just wanted to put it in there that I think, you know, Trump has the right to have a good person in there, and Jeff Sessions he's really been doing nothing. He needs an attorney general.
We don't know that he hasn't been doing anything. We know that he hasn't been doing what Trump wants him to do. He hasn't been producing the results that Trump wants. What are those results that Trump wants?
Well, for one thing, Congress has not stepped up to the plate and produced documents that have been asked for months that have to do with the real Russia investigation, which is this plan that the DNC and the DOJ and the intelligence agencies came up with.
It's very complicated. The answer
yeah,
is
but I mean, they need to come up with these documents when they're being asked for.
It doesn't have anything to do with documents, believe it or not.
Well, okay. Well,
it's
thought it did.
Very, very simple, very elementary. The reason for Trump's firing of Jeff Sessions.
Well, I think he may want to try to bring, wind down this Mueller investigation. I'm sure that's what everyone thinks. But I don't see why there is a Mueller investigation, because I've never seen any evidence that that there has been any involvement from Russia in our election.
Okay. You gave it a good try.
Bye-bye.
Gave it a very good try. Thanks, Lisa. Ali from New York. Trump fires Sessions.
Yes. Hi, Yatrice. How are you doing?
Good.
Okay, this is what I wanted to say about that situation. One was in another program that I was listening to it last week. Somebody said that Trump will fire Sessions, but he will give that job to Lindsey Graham. That's what that person. And I could see Lindsey Graham getting that job. But I will say this about Sessions.
Lindsey Graham is not going to get that job. Look for governor of New Jersey to get that job.
Oh, the former, you think that is who's going to get the job?
I think so. But anyway, tell me what is the significance of this thing. Let's not get to the side.
Okay, this is what I wanted to say about Jeff Sessions and him letting him go. They had a lot of problem, but besides that, I think Jeff Sessions eventually will have turned on Trump, because the humiliation that is that Trump put him through. I think at the end, I don't think they liked each other. So I think eventually, and I think Trump and the people around Trump, they were looking at that it eventually he will have turned on Trump. I don't know if that is significant or not, but I think that's something that
it
would have happened.
It is a significant point. It is a significant point. But let me just introduce some ideas here. Trump has been made painfully aware because of these elections and how they went, because he did not expect, in his head, although he's saying that the Republican Party did very well, a very good showing. You know that Trump is completely disappointed because he expected a total shutout. He did not get that. And that only increases his anxiety about what will happen 2 years from now, the general election. And he cannot afford to have anything more impede his success or his imagined success in the polls come 2020. What if you have a guy who, well, he's doing his own thing. That's Sessions. He's doing his own thing. And he's not doing what you want him to do because his belief is, I head up this department. I know what I'm doing. And I'm not here to do your bidding. You can't tell me what your priorities are because what? That means you insist on using this department as your own personal political tool. You are now enmeshing me in doing wrong things to suit you, but that are major problems legally because you are operating, you intend to use me as your hitman, and I'm not going to do that. It is against the law, and I'm not doing that. This department will not operate as your hitman to go after specific elected officials to do particular jobs, even possibly to fabricate evidence and to basically take charge of it personally to fulfill your personal objectives. That cannot happen. And that was essentially the you get the sense that that was the major tension between Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump. I'm not a fan of either of them, but I'm saying this is a very interesting thing. Trump right now, having come through the midterms with all the energy that he expended and everything, he didn't quite do as well as he wanted to. So in his mind, he is raging angry right now because given the investment he had made to get this party situated in a particular way to get the predictable outcome of victory, he didn't get it. And now that the Democrats have a hold of Congress, and now that they can order investigations, now that they could subpoena records, now that they have the ability to do things that they didn't have before, more than ever, he needs somebody to block it. He's got the Senate, but that's not enough. He has got lots of skeletons in his closet, and that was supposed to be Jeff Sessions' job, to block him legally, to make sure that nothing zings him and brings him down. So I think that's the more accurate analysis of it. Donald Trump is freaking out. He's on a two-year timeline. He's got a lot of stuff to fix. Much of it is legal. And much of it could put him and even family members in jail. He needs to have the trust of a person like Jeff Sessions to do exactly as he is instructed to do in order to save Trump from legal embarrassment and even legal indictments and his family and others based on If Sessions were to do his job properly, and anybody else coming in, if they were to operate even quasi-independently, Trump will be uncomfortable with that. So after the elections, Trump has seen the writing on the wall. And he knows that he's in for a fight. And he knows that the fight that's coming would be a tough one to defend himself against, because it will be expensive. So you go after the Mueller investigation or any other investigation like it. You hire somebody that you can instruct, you can control totally, you can manipulate, because he's in trouble. All right. I'm glad I got that question right. Okay, let's dig up another question. We have in our subject matter today of party politics, standing strong in Georgia, but caving in Florida. Who will address that question? Let's see. Let's go down the list. All right. Eric from Pennsylvania. You have the great privilege of deciphering all of that and getting to the heart of the significance of that question.
Okay. Well, I was actually chiming in on the previous topic. So
okay.
We closed it out.
We closed it
out. Right. Well, you're the dictator here, so I guess that's wonderful.
Have a good conversation. Thank you. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air. Standing strong in Georgia and conceding in Florida. What are we talking about? Tony is gone. 888-874-4888. It's a clue. It's a great clue. And it's a great significance to that clue that we should all be able to appreciate. 888-874-4888. Okay, then. In the interest of time to move along, because we have a lot of ground to cover, I will throw out yet another clue. So whoever calls next will have the opportunity to pick one. And that is, we have Obama and Nancy Pelosi urging reconciliation with Republicans, which is okay, fine. But where is reconciliation most needed? That's the question. Where at this time is reconciliation most needed? I know, it's I told it was a pop quiz. You have to be somewhat mysterious in framing the question. Otherwise, it loses the whole idea of a pop quiz. But you have enough clues to work with. Let's see. 888-874-4888. We are at the halfway mark of the hour. So we'll take a break and come back to your thoughts on these questions right after this. Chris from Palm Beach, you're on the air.
Therese, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
All right. To answer the question about who needs reconciliation, where is it needed? I would say first and foremost, for the Democrats, it's needed in their party. There's no reason why.
Wonderful. That's a great answer.
There's no reason why. Yeah, because honestly, there's no reason why in 2018, when you look at the incoming chairman for the House committees, they're all 70, 80-year-old people. And not for nothing, they've been there long enough. They haven't delivered in a very long time. Including people like Mr. Lewis. Like, you know, he put in his work decades ago, but they've largely been ineffective as legislators over the past three decades. Like, it's time for them to go.
Well, how would this reconciliation work as you see it?
Well, to the younger generation of Democratic legislatures, senators, well, there's none in the Senate, but for the House, the younger ones who want to really bring about change to the party, they need to not go along with party lines and just blindly support people like Dick Durbin or Pelosi, et cetera, et cetera. That's what I think.
What would be the most powerful kind of reconciliation that Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi can do at this time? What would be the most powerful expression of reconciliation?
As far as Obama goes, I don't know. Like, maybe he could just go away. As far as Pelosi...
that's not reconciliation.
Yeah, but it's a different form of reconciliation. But as far as Pelosi goes, the only way to reconcile this is for her to say, I'm not going to be running for leadership within the party. That's it. There's no other way. Or she could nominate somebody who has not been there for 3, 4, 5, 6 cycles.
All right. Well, you hit the nail on the head from the word go. So you get serious points and respect for that. Thanks so much, Chris.
My mom is
calling.
My mother would be proud when she listens to this tomorrow.
Good job. Lamont from New York City, what could be the most powerful form of reconciliation that Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi can do? Lamont, are you there? Okay. So he's not there. All right. I was thinking that the most powerful form of reconciliation that the Democratic Party and its leaders, if you will, including the former president, Barack Obama, and its current leader, Nancy Pelosi, they can apologize. They could apologize for their underperformance. They can apologize for a party in serious disarray, as we have seen. They can apologize for not listening to the people who are supporting this party. They can admit that they dropped the ball on issues that were so critical, and yet they decided to say nothing or do nothing about them. They could apologize for things like not following through on some critical issues. They could apologize for the distance they created between the party and the people. Now, that would be very significant apologies, and that would go a long way. That would go a very long way in closing the gap and boosting not only the morale of the party, but the effectiveness of the party. The Democratic Party has fallen down on many, many occasions where people were looking for leadership. They just weren't there. And if we do get to the question that I asked previously, where no one has bothered to answer, it's an example of the Democratic Party failing when it doesn't have to. It has all the resources it needs to be far more effective and far more aggressive. But instead, they did nothing. They did not respond with the sense of urgency that the people have been looking for. They've done it too many times. They've been forgiven a lot. But even if they look, if they take a look at the performance of voters, voters are turned off. They need to romance the community all over again. They can offer a sincere apology and admit where they went wrong. But to commit to a new idea about what service to the community means, that would be a fantastic expression of remorse, of a genuine interest in being the party that the people are asking for. 888-874-4888. We still have that question to answer. We have a concession in Florida, and we have a resolution in Georgia. What am I talking about? Do you know? Do you care to explain? 888-874-4888. Okay, I'm still seeing Lamont. Has he left us or what? I'm still seeing a name here. Okay. All righty. And the last question that I'll put up for your consideration so you could answer it is this. Do you really think, do voters really know what the parties stand for? Do voters really know what the parties stand for? When you vote under the aegis of any party, are you sure that you know what the party stands for? And how do you make sure that you know what the party stands for, so you know whether the party is in line with what it says it stands for, or the party has veered away from what it promised to stand for? What is the answer to that question? Do you know? Do you have an idea? Ed from Philadelphia? Which question are you going to tackle today?
I would I'd respond to the question at hand. Does the party that we vote for, you know, are they going to do what we want them to do? I don't know. The Democrats don't do what we want them to do. I mean, there are any number of examples from the Obama administration where, you know, he talked about single payer, he talked about union rights, and kicked the can down the road. I don't know. I don't think any of them do.
Do you feel in any year that you have voted that you completely understood what the party that you voted for, what it's about, what it promises to do?
I thought the Democrats could deliver on some of those sort of ideals, but to date, no, they haven't delivered on most of them.
Could you cite some of the things that you think they haven't delivered on?
Labor, for instance, there was a Supreme Court decision that came down where unions couldn't take union dues, union members didn't have to pay union dues. Well, that was something that could have been addressed and dealt with under the Obama administration. But like I said, he kicked the can down the road and left it for someone else to handle. And it goes to the Supreme Court, and they ruled on it, you know, 5-4 against workers and unions.
Good example. What do you think can be done, if anything, that whatever a party says it stands for is completely in line with what it promises to do?
Maybe don't vote for that party. Maybe withhold your vote, or I'm not sure. Mass demonstration. I'm not really sure.
But do you feel comfortable as a voter voting, knowing these things and having these doubts and feelings about any party that you vote for?
Right. No. For instance, this business in Georgia and in Florida, I wouldn't have voted for either one of those candidates.
Okay.
And I would just withhold my vote across the board for today going forward. I would withhold my vote or take some other action to demonstrate my frustration. Or like you said, have a contractual relationship with these candidates and these parties going forward.
Well, thank you. You did great. All right. We still have these questions outstanding about the concession in Florida and the standing strong in Georgia. And we now have this new question. Are we sure that you know what the party stands for that you're voting for? All right, Lamont, you're back with us. You're on the air. Which question are you addressing?
Hey, I guess so. How you doing?
Okay.
There's a serious problem going on where the concession in Georgia appears to be avoiding the issue. Mr. Brian Kemp cannot be the fox looking over the hen house and looking over these votes.
All right, just slow down a little bit and give us the context. You're saying something very important. Tell us why, what we need to appreciate about your position. Give us a little background.
The background is this. Secretary of State George Kemp has been running the office and overseeing the Board of Elections and the voters' booth. Although he's maybe micromanaging things, or maybe perhaps micromanaging things, and then his staff look over and counting the ballots. Of course, it's a conflict of interest. And for him to be running for an office of governor in that position of Secretary of State, there were 5 or 6 federal lawsuits filed in Georgia on election day, the very day of election, that had your basic common man going to the federal court filing against the Brian Kemp for his breach of his official duties and his oath of office to uphold the election and for be fair and balanced. Those 5 or 6 lawsuits are in a federal court. That was a compromise dealt with by a federal judge to have force and persuade Brian Kemp to leave his office. Then subsequently, there are 56 or 51,000 votes prior to the election that Mr. Kemp deemed, or we use his abuse of discretionary duties to hold from being counted. Fast forward to now, there is ballots, mail-in ballots, and uncounted votes that have yet to be counted. So we have pretty much shown that there is illegalities, breach of fiduciary duties, and his discretionary procedure to follow the law and the constitutional right for a vote. So it's still a neck-and-neck race. And I would have to say that it looks like he's going to lose that. If everything is honorable, it looks as if Mr. Brian Kemp will lose that race to Adams. I can go further, well, but I can go on to the next question.
Okay. That's excellent, an excellent presentation, and you're right. I only want you to add a little bit more here, and that is, who is to guarantee that this is a fair vote? You already said that the Secretary of State, who's in charge of elections, is also running. So how do you see the folks in Georgia being assured of a free and fair vote?
There is no reassurances at this point, and there will never be any reassurance because the people in power, like people mentioned before, the people of decision-making authority and those who are in their official capacity of decision-making authority are blinded, brainwashed, and at the behest of their leaders are controlling the ballots. So there's no guarantee that our dear sister Adams to be the first African-American governor, because there is so much purging, so much gerrymandering, and abuse of the voters, voting itself nationwide, that if it's not for another federal judge to step in and to seize all the votes as is and to allow outside resources or those who are honorable and honest to count the votes. Currently now, the reason why I say is no guarantee is because you have these different counties in Georgia where there's no guarantee that you have an honest, noble vote, where you have someone who has honesty to count the votes. It may be closer to Atlanta, where there's more of African-American people of color stronghold in women, where those votes will be counted in honor and honesty. But on the outskirts in a rural area, there's no guarantee of that.
Now, let me ask you one last question here. This is happening in Georgia. The gubernatorial candidate, Stacey Abrams, has vowed that she's not going to concede because the margin is so slim, even now, between the votes that she has gotten and the votes Kemp has gotten. Where is the Democratic Party?
Excellent question. If I can say that this is the whole entire, linchpin of it all, and the giant, colossal disappointment of it all. There is no backup. There is no loyalty. There is no one who holds your hand. Where is Obama? Where is the Nancy Pelosi? Where is the Hillary Clintons of the world? Where is the engine, the engine of the Democratic Party when it looks like Miss Abrams, where is the engine of the Democratic Party for Stacey Abrams to come in there and to galvanize that you have pretty much you see blood and you know there's a victory on the horizon, but they're not there. They're advocates, their chief, their captains, their lieutenants of the Democratic Party or the DNC doesn't know how to bring it home. Run. You went to second, went to first base, second base, third base, but bring it home. Bring it, make a home run hit, similar to Gilliam in Florida. He didn't have to concede at all. It was neck and neck, and the same voter shenanigans probably took place, voter rigging. You have an author named Greg Pallas who discusses voter caging, voter purging, gerrymandering, and intimidation at the voter booth. And Greg Pallas and others have documented for decades. But even in Florida, where you asked a very good question, where is the Democratic Party when it comes to pitching a hand? They can certainly walk the walk in Trump for votes, but when it comes to these neck-and-neck races where it looks like it's on the line and somehow you may have Diebold or Microsoft Word open office system where these voting digital machines can be compromised by tampering, there is no, you're absolutely right, there's no infrastructure or no will to bring a helping hand to back these candidates up.
Okay. Well, I am so glad you called because you warmed my heart. You did.
You're welcome.
You got all of the important points. You nailed them. You nailed them. No question about it. Thanks, Ed.
I would like to talk about Sessions. The one thing about Sessions, though, if I may.
Okay.
Thank you. Your listening audiences, may or may not know. There has people been saying this, and I think you and Gary Noah have talked about this. There's an infrastructure of a civil war going on within white-collar white people, excuse the pun, in the alphabet agencies, from the Pentagon to National Security Administration to the FBI to the CIA to the State Department. No one knows whose loyalty they should adhere to. No one trusts anyone because you have a, lack of a better word, a deep state cabal in place that's been in there for quite some time, for decades, since the Nixon administration, probably even longer than that, since Eisenhower or so. And you have a the leisurely affair and the marriage of dastardly deeds with the Hillary Clinton, Obama, George Bush, and the deep state running ruckshop off of taxpayers' money, off the United States Treasury. Here comes Donald Trump, a no-nonsense, wolf, crude vagabond who is not accepted by the deep state elite, the Rothschild and the Federal Reserve. They don't trust him. So you have this commotion, this infighting taking place, where Donald Trump, like Caesar, like Constantine, like Nixon, will fire anyone who's jeopardizing his position because he's not in the camp. He's a middle management, mid-level, low-tier executive trying to have a high place among the oligarchs of the world. And these oligarchs are just as bad or even worse than him.
Well, that was good as a lanyap, I must say. Thank you so much for adding that on. Thank you for your call today, Ed from Philly.
Take care.
All right. We move on to David from Brooklyn.
Yes, Beatrice. Good afternoon.
I want to tackle
the last question.
Go ahead.
What do people know about the party they're voting for and so forth? And what your question makes me think of is that these parties are voted, that people vote for, the two political parties that are in charge, they put their ballot in, but they are not the ones that control these parties. These parties are not controlled by the people, and they're not there to serve the interests of the mass of the people that live here. They are there to serve the interests of those at the top, the oligarchs and the people that provide the money for those who are going to run. So I would say that most people don't understand that. So they're easily manipulated on the basis of various prejudices, various things that are designed to get their attention. And no one concentrates on what the party really stands for. They may throw out the usual bones, a few things, and take them back when it's convenient. But the point is that most people are voting for a party, either Republican or Democrat, in this particular situation, that do not, in the long run, represent their interests. They represent the interests of the corporate business class and the people at the top who provide the ducats for those who are going to run, and they are running people who will serve the interests, by and large, for those people at the top. And that's what I respond to on that question.
And I think you're dead on with your answer. Thank you so much. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. I so enjoyed it, this pop quiz. If you're hearing some noises, the landscapers, they love my program. They crank up all the noise-making equipment just about this time. But it's a good sign, and I feel really happy about it, to be in your company, because you're on top of things and you're thinking. And that's all we can do to safeguard ourselves. We spend some time thinking, and then things become clearer and clearer, and we become more and more immune to the attempts of all these various systems to manipulate us. So thank you so much for your considered opinions today. Great show. Great show. Everybody wins. It was a wonderful demonstration of how current you are. And that's going to be the best protection, not only for yourself, but for the community as well, having people like you among us. All right. So we'll see you tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.
Shine on. Baby, you got to shine on. That's what you're born to do. Me and you. You got to shine on. Sparkle, baby. Shine on,
shine on.
Baby, you got to shine on.